like hot sauce? Then you'll love Great White Hot Sauce. It's a small batch, handmade hot sauce, made especially for you. So if you want some badass hot sauce, go to www.trygreatwhite.com. Well, here we are, episode 80. Wow, right? Crazy. On this episode, Jack's back from yet another hiatus. I know, I get used to it. But we're going to talk about Prince, maybe some current music news, and whatever else comes to mind. It's all going to be music, so it's all good, right? So sit back, relax, and enjoy episode 80. Should be good.
The KOFB studio presents Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast hosted by Scott McLean. Now, let's talk music. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the podcast. You know the name, I'm not going to say it. Thank you, Amanda, for that wonderful introduction. Young Amanda is home. She'll be leaving, I believe, I don't know, Saturday, Sunday to go back to FSU. So I think while I have her here, I'm going to do a re-recording of the intro. I'm going to update that. I updated everything else. Why not, right? Start, end the year on a change instead of opening the year with the change. Everybody does that. That's easy. But they never stick to it. So, yeah. Speaking to never sticking to it, as my friend Jack Calabrese.
Wow. Hey. Wow, you're already starting, man.
Hey, can't I missed
stick
you.
To it. I missed you too. Wow.
What's up, my
so
friend?
So you're gonna be re-recording the intro, huh?
With Amanda, yeah. I'm gonna change the music up. As you heard, I changed up.
Oh my god, you just froze.
The intro, you know, what we're gonna be talking about, theme music. Right? Got a little bluesy.
As it pertains to your intro, one of the things that was pointed out to me recently was I lost my co-host status. You took me off.
Well, it's noticeable when you're not here.
you took me off. I was like, I told them, I didn't even notice. And they were like, yeah, you've been demoted. You've essentially been fired.
You don't listen. That's why you don't know. You never listen to the show.
I don't listen to the show. I don't listen to the show when I'm on it because I don't want to hear the flaws and flubs. It's really a self-preservation thing because I don't want to second guess myself. I want to keep the vibrancy and the freshness of our interaction without having to think about how I'm coming across. And Scott, I just lost you. Where are you? Did you quit? Am I still on? Oh my god.
Here we go.
What happened?
What just happened? I don't know. Connectivity issues.
You didn't like the topic that we were talking about?
No, I think you're stupid for being that way. I think you should listen to it because you're good. You're not going to fucking psych yourself out. You've been doing, dude, you do public speaking for fucking living pretty much. How are you going to psych yourself out listening to the podcast?
I don't know. I just,
so
you know
what? If you make the mistake, that's why we do it live. How many mistakes have I made? Shut up.
Let me see.
Shut up. It's Thanksgiving. I made a mistake last week and I was speaking fast. Sometimes I, as you know, I talk fast and I out-talk myself. And I said, and this was a cringe after the show. I said, Tim York. I went, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Slow down. Why don't I just slow down? Just,
but, yeah, but, it's but that was
that Bustelo that I drink before the show.
That wasn't last week. That was previous. Didn't you tell that story? The guys that story that you had made that mistake and you said that I was all over you. Like,
that was Peter Weller and Paul Weller. That was that story. That's what you were like.
Okay.
What did
all
you
right.
call him? And Peter Weller is RoboCop, by the way, right?
Yeah. Peter Weller.
I was on with Mark Smith last week. And by the way, we did a 2-hour show. I'm just saying. Wait,
hold on a second. Who gives a shit? Dude, look, I have to tell you, you know, you and I have different philosophies about this, right? I think that you put in a solid hour, you know, you get in and you get out. But that's just the way that's true. I think, I right?
I don't argue about that. I know
and
what
it's,
we
it's
do.
Not, it's not just limited to this show. You know, like the last time that Springsteen toured, you know, they were like, oh, my God, Bruce is 60, he's 68 years old. He's 68 years old and he's playing 4-hour shows. Hey, I love Springsteen. Seen him a bunch of times. Give me a solid 90 minutes. Let me get the fuck out of there. Yeah. If he's playing 4 hours, he's playing a bunch of stuff that I don't necessarily care to hear.
I want to get to him in a second, but no, I mean, and it's different. I'm dealing with different styles, different types. Like, you know, you and I have been doing this for almost 2 years, because imagine that. And, you know, we have the way we do things, and we've gone 90 minutes before. When I'm talking to, say, Lou Colicchio and Mark Smith, then it can be, I don't know. It's just different conversation. As you have a conversation with me about music, you might have something, a conversation with somebody else that's shorter, like, you know, a quick conversation, or it could be longer. Sure. It's just a dynamic. It's not.
No,
I don't mind doing an hour as long as we do an hour.
I get it. You know, again, we have different philosophies. On your side of the world right now, you actually have a clock that's saying that we're, you know, 3 or 4 minutes in. My phone right now is actually counting down. I have 57 minutes left.
You're such a fucking asshole. Speaking of assholes.
I gotta go sleepy time.
Speaking of assholes, let me see where I kept this article. Let me see. Well, basically, I have it somewhere. I'm not going to seek it out. It's in my notes somewhere. But I read an article with Bruce Springsteen the other day about his ticket prices. And they said, you know, well, some of the tickets are going for upwards of $5,000, where, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And he's like, well, you know, my whole career, he goes, first of all, I'm 73, so criticism doesn't really bother me. You know, I'm used to it by now and da, da, da. And he says, in my whole career, I've always tried to keep ticket prices low, which he can't control that. It's bullshit. But he said, you know, so I just said to my guys this time, what's everybody else doing? What are all the other bands doing? And they're doing that pricing, what is it?
So
term for it?
Dynamic pricing.
Dynamic pricing. So let me finish. So he says, well, you know, so I said, let's just do what everyone else is doing. And, you know, and they said, well, what about the $5,000? He said, well, how's this? Put it this way. If you don't like what you heard, get your money back on the way out. Yeah. If you know what, you pretentious fucking old piece of Woody Allen look like shit. Fuck Bruce Springsteen and fuck Sean Mellencamp too. Fuck that motherfucker.
We'll get to John Mellencamp in a second, but you know, it's funny, like you and I thinking the same thing, because I actually do have that exact section of the Rolling Stone article, and I was actually going to kind of read through it. So, you know, the interviewer said it caused a bit of an uproar in the fan community because some of the tickets use dynamic prices and some tickets hit $5,000. Did you know in advance about the price points and the dynamic pricing, and do you have any regrets about that? And Bruce says, what I do is a very simple thing. I tell my guys, go out and see what everybody else is doing. Let's charge a little less. That's generally the directions. They go out and they set it up for the past 49 years or however long we've been playing. We've pretty much been out there under market value. I've enjoyed that. it's been great for the fans, which I'll tell you, having seen Springsteen many, many times, that's bullshit. Exactly. His ticket prices have been generally on par with anybody
else.
He can't control the
ticket prices. He doesn't have that power.
I think he has some input into it, but, you know, production.
Ticketmaster and Live Nation aren't listening.
So he said, this time I told them, hey, we're 73 years old. The guys are here. I want to do what everybody else is doing, my peers. So that's what happened. That's what they did. And he laughs. But ticket buying has gotten very confusing, not just for the fans, but for the artists also. At the bottom line is that most of our tickets are totally affordable, which is not true. They are in an affordable range. We have those tickets that are going to go for that higher price somewhere anyway. The ticket broker or someone is going to be taking that money. I'm going, hey, why shouldn't that money go to the guys that are going up there and being on stage and sweating every night for 3 hours? So here's the other thing that you had made reference to. It says, as you said, the fans were pretty upset. Backstreet said it caused them to suffer a crisis of faith. They wrote an op-ed where it said that the dynamic pricing violates the implicit contract between Bruce Springsteen and his fans. How did you feel about that? All that blowback against you? He says, well, I'm old. I take a lot of things in stride. He laughs. You don't like to be criticized. You certainly don't want to be the poster boy for high ticket prices. It's the last thing that you prefer to be, but that's how it went. You have to own the decisions you made and go out there and just continue to do your best. And that was my take on it. I think if folks come to the show, they're going to have a good time. It's horseshit.
Did he say, did you get to the part where he says, but if they don't like what they see, they can get their money back on the way out? Like you go up to the ticket guy and say, I want my money back in the box office. You know what? He's just a fucking old jack off now.
Yeah. So he said it created an opportunity for that to occur. So at some point we went for it. I know it was an unpopular with some fans, but if there are any complaints on the way out, if you have any complaints on the way out, you can have your money back. You know, look, the bottom line is that Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band are all complicit in this, and they're fleecing their fans.
Yes,
I mean, there were tickets out there that were over $5,000, and there are still tickets available through Ticketmaster, which is, I think, a criminal organization in the way that they run things, that are still well above $1,500, $1,700. Look, people shouldn't have to choose between a mortgage payment and going to see Bruce Springsteen, which, by the way,
because he's one of the elites. He's one of the, you know, Hollywood music industry elites that they just don't give a shit anymore. You know,
well, here's the thing. You know, Bruce has always been about like the working class guy and whatnot. And he's definitely turned a corner for a guy that's worth what? $500, $600, $700 million. He's going out on the tour and taking advantage of people, you know, basically in a recession. Now, you know, if you're in a recession, maybe you shouldn't go see Bruce Springsteen, regardless of the price. But you know what? You're just blatantly fleecing your fans. And by the way, not for nothing, Bruce Springsteen, 70 plus years old, he's not as good as he was. He should be charging less.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, I agree. Just out of curiosity, you know, when I read that article, so, you know, you think about Bruce, hundreds of millions of dollars. But I looked at, you know, some of the other members of the E Street Band, like, okay, maybe he could play it off. Well, you know, the band members may need it. Gary W. Talent, the bass player of the Bruce Springsteen, you know, E Street Band, is worth $50 million. None of those guys are hurt.
No. No.
But that, you know, the bottom line is,
the guys are here, so I figure, you know, why don't they get a piece? They're sweating. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. The bottom line is that, I don't know. There's got to be some type of revolt from the fans. Like, you know, look, the only way that those ticket prices come down, if the fans stop buying them.
But the thing is, you said it earlier, he's worth $500 million. Do you think he gives a fuck if they show up or not? Like, it's 73 years old. Is this a typical money grab? Like, how much more?
You got to think of it the opposite way. You know, I mean, if Bruce Springsteen says, look, you know, not for nothing, if people had such a problem with the prices of the tickets, why are all the shows sold out?
Exactly.
Somebody's affording it. Somebody's making that choice. I just think it's in bad faith.
It's not the people, the working class people that built his career, that he built his career on them, on their pockets,
sure,
on their paychecks.
Sure.
And then when he gets, like Howard Stern, once you get to a certain point, now you get a seat at the elite table and you're a fucking sellout. They all want it. They all want a seat at that table. Once they get it, the fans don't matter. I mean, Howard Stern still has a following, but it's not like it used to be.
You know, well, it's definitely different. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's different. Now they're more like I said, so the people that are making, you know, I don't know, let's just start at a number, that are making over $100,000 a year can afford a ticket, you know? But that's, you start getting up into classes, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like, it's monetary class, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what he knows. He knows those people with that disposable income are going to buy his tickets. Metallica just did it down here, and talk about building your legacy on the backs and pockets of
You know more about this than I do. That show that you're referencing, or the shows, if there were more than one of them,
one.
Metallica, weren't they kind of special shows? Wasn't it like a small, intimate type thing where they played an unusually small place?
No, it was at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood. And Hard Rock Live holds about, I don't know, 5,000 people.
5,000?
I think it holds about 5,000, yeah.
So that's a small venue for Metallica.
Right, and they played their first two albums.
So
that was it. They didn't play anything from Master of Puppets.
Look, I'm not trying to excuse what Metallica did, but I think, look, for me, if Springsteen said that instead of playing the TD Garden, you know, the Boston Garden, and he was playing the Orpheum, you know, that holds, you know, 1,500 or 2,500 seats, a small venue like that. You know what? Then I can see the ticket prices, and I can kind of excuse the Metallica thing, that if they were playing a much smaller venue that gave their fans kind of a different and a more intimate experience. And in all honesty, I don't know what Metallica was charging, so I may be way off base here.
No, the tickets were upwards of, you know, $2,000, $3,000.
But was that the same dynamic pricing thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The reality of it is that the artists are complicit and they are benefiting by it.
Yeah, the working class people are the ones that say, hey, what about us? We've been following you. Like somebody said, I've been following Metallica my whole life, pretty much, since I was a kid in junior high, middle school. And now I get a chance to see them, and the tickets are $2,000. That's... I've been buying their records, and they kind of look at it that way. They're like, I'm just bring the price down, work it out and get the price down so the regular people, not the Fort Lauderdale, you know, West Palm Beach, Miami crowd, can come up and spend all their money and have, like, you know, oh, look at us in here seeing fucking Metallica. I guarantee you, not a one of them had a fucking Metallica t-shirt on. You know what I mean? In fucking in jeans and work boots.
So, you know? So while we're on the topic of Ticketmaster, obviously, I think we're both aware of the whole Taylor Swift debacle, and which I just think the Taylor Swift thing, I don't think is anything new. I think it's just brought a heightened awareness because of who Taylor Swift is, and that there are enough people in the government that have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, or whatnot that were adversely affected. So they've been awakened by that particular situation. But let me share something else. A couple of weeks ago, as you know, I went to that Bono, you know, has written a memoir and he's out doing a book tour. And he did his second stop, I believe it was at the Orpheum Theater in Boston. Again, smaller venue. I don't think it holds any more than 2,500 people. And there was a strict 2-ticket limit per person through Ticketmaster. So dynamic pricing. I was able to grab a seat at a relatively reasonable price. But here's the thing. I was looking at Ticketmaster a couple of days before the show. I would pop in occasionally just to see I had some friends that wanted to go, so I was kind of scouting to see if I could find tickets for them. And I was also trying to see, hey, could I improve my own vantage point? So with an on sale that had a very strict ticket limit of two, I will tell you that the day of the show and the day before the show, all of a sudden, entire rows were becoming available. Like two and three rows at $800, $900, you know, a piece. And I honestly think that what happens is that the promoter, the artist, and Ticketmaster have worked it out where they're able to retain or to purchase some of the tickets themselves and to put them on sale as a resale. And they intentionally hold those seats back. So that's why I think that's one of the reasons why people can't get the decent seats that they're hoping to get, is because Ticketmaster is holding them.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know what happens? Like, I guarantee you, like the Springsteen show in Boston doesn't happen until March. I'll guarantee you that a couple of weeks, a couple of days before the show, tickets will start popping back up into the system. And people will be conditioned from a psychological standpoint. Well, hey, you know, they were 5,000 or they were 15, you know, 100. Oh, I found one for 700. What a deal.
Yeah.
And Springsteen, it's the FOMO, and the East Street Band,
missing out thing, you know?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. They have this whole form of manipulation. I don't know if anything is going to come of it. I mean, you know, that there are a bunch of government officials that say that they're going to look into it, but I think a lot of that stuff is just a joke.
My daughter Amanda was on the pre-sale list. She was on that list, like pre-sale, and she was right on it. And she's like, nothing, nothing. And yeah. I didn't think much. She told me about it. I didn't think much of it. And then I hear about it on the news a couple of days later, and she was a victim of it. She was very disappointed. You know, she was looking forward to it. She had, again, get this. I got the pre-sale. You know what it is. I know what it is. You know, you're like, I'm just going to move in at the time and get my tickets. And then the public goes on sale the next day. But so,
yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. Like, look, you and I probably at one time or another bought tickets off of a scalper, whether it was a Patriots, Red Sox game, yeah. You know, concert or whatnot. And look, I'm not defending, you know, scalpers, but those guys and gals that got into scalping, they worked for it, right? Yeah. They waited out in line. They made the phone calls. You know, they put in an effort. You know, and I'm not saying it's any better or worse, but the reality of it is that Ticketmaster has the capability. They have access to all the tickets. They create this desire for these seats because they have the capability of purchasing them. You know, it's almost like insider trading.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You know, you know, you think about it, right? Ticketmaster, if you know, Bruce Springsteen, let's say it's a lesser known act, they buy a bunch of tickets in the hopes that they're going to create such a demand that they can actually upcharge people. And if not, they can just put them back in and recoup what they made.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Scalping
is a lost art. I knew all the scalpers when I worked canine security at the Boston Garden. I knew every one of those scalpers. And actually, I had one. I needed it.
Most of them from Southie, right?
You had Charlestown, Dorchester, and Southie. Those were the big three. And I knew them all after a while. I had to pound some heads off the wall to get their attention. But we all came to to an agreement. And then we all ended up liking each other. Like, I have 100 stories about those guys. But and they did work for it. And back then, that's what they did. They worked for it. And it's a lost art because now they just go online and get tickets. These dudes would, like, wait in the line in front of the building, you know, overnight to get these tickets, and then they'd resell them. Then they'd buy off of you. You got any extra tickets? It's a whole thing. There's always a two-man operation. One buys, one sells. But have you ever... Go on.
Did I ever share the story of waiting in line at the Orpheum Theater? For, I think it was Van Halen tickets. So, you know, me and a couple of buddies of mine, you know, we skip school and we take the train into Boston and we go over to, not even Ticketmaster, it was Ticketron.
Ticketron, that's right. Yeah.
And we get in line, and we're probably, you know, maybe 15 or 20 people back. You know, there's a bunch of people that had either gotten up super, super early in the morning, or they stayed out there overnight. And behind us, you know, with a blink of an eye, there were 150 people behind us. So you have this big long line. And for those people that are listening or watching, you know, you probably don't know that the Orpheum Theater in Boston, Massachusetts is actually at the end of an alley. It's a street called Hamilton Place. So there's no outlet on the other side. It's literally in an alley. Yeah. So 10 o'clock, the tickets are going to go on sale. Literally 5 minutes of 10, a white van pulls up at the end of the alley, and a guy gets out with a baseball bat and slides open the van door, and about 10 young kids our age or whatnot get out of the van and walk up, and they push everybody back. And those people got the first 10 slots in line. And they nobody said a word.
There was no cell phones back then. Up. Yeah. No cell
phones. There were no cell phones. Nobody was taking pictures. You know, nobody said, "Hey, this is bullshit," because the 365-pound, 6'2" guy with a baseball bat looked like he knew how to use it. And looked like he had used it. So, you know, those guys bought their tickets, quietly walked away, got back in the van. The guy smiled, got back in the van, and they drove away. And what I had found out, I actually met him a handful of years later. His name was Kevin. He was a bookie in South Boston, but he also scalped tickets, and he would go around in his van, and he would pick kids up in South Boston. And he would pay them $20 and take them to lunch to do this little act for him.
And he'd tell them, "Don't worry. Just go buy. Here's the money. Go buy the tickets.
Here's the money.
Yep.
You know, we'll move everybody out of the line." It was the craziest thing I ever saw.
Can't do that today.
And the funny thing about it is this 6 foot, 365 guy was the most soft-spoken, polite gentleman that I had ever met. But when I was talking to him, I could kind of peer around his briefcase, and he had a couple of stacks of tickets, and he had a couple of stacks of cash, and he had a handgun.
Yeah, tough guys don't have to talk.
No.
Real tough guys don't have to talk, you know?
No.
They don't have to be boisterous and belligerent. Those are the ones you look at and you go, okay, he's a little insecure right now. So that tells you something.
So with this whole ticket thing, you know, so you and I have had decades upon decades of enjoying shows at reasonable prices. And I know that I'm kind of getting to the point where I was like, okay, it's almost over. I'm almost at the point where I'm making decisions. I'm already making decisions saying, you know, on shows that I would normally go, I would normally be at that Springsteen show. And I, to be quite honest with you, I might still be at that Springsteen show if something falls into my lap. I don't like it, but I do feel that I'm quickly getting to the point where I'm like, okay, it's not worth it anymore.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Well, I'm asking you if you're kind of,
you know, I'm very selective. You know, I'm selective about who I go see.
Yes,
and if I think it's worth it, then I, you know, I might dig down and get the tickets. If, like, I took, you know, my son David to see Gorillaz in Miami a month ago. And, you know, those tickets weren't cheap, you know, but a reasonable $125 each, you know. See how I say that? A reasonable one. And this was general admission on the floor where we always go. And we're always, you know, you remember where we were at the Garden? Where if you're looking at the stage, you're at the left of the stage.
Yeah, yeah.
We were at the left staring. It would be the right side for the act. We always end up at that angle. I don't know why. We've seen them three times. Miami, Boston, and Miami. And we always end up on that side. But, you know, it was worth it because he's a super fan, you know? Yeah. There's groups that I've just kind of bypassed. I'm like, yeah, I'd like to see him, but I'm not going to. I'm not gonna pay that much money. It's crazy. Like, I would have liked to have seen Chrissy Hynde a few years back. She was charging fucking $300 a ticket. You know, fuck Chrissy Hynde. Nah, you ain't worth $300 a ticket, babe. I saw you when you were young and you were great. I saw you, unfortunately, in the second Pretenders. Still great. It's Chrissy Hynde, really. I'm not paying $300 to see you. No. I think the Tears for Fears and Garbage, I went out of my way to get better tickets, like closer to the stage. So I paid a reasonable price for that, for each ticket. I think it was probably, for me and my wife, I think $500, right? But those were two bands, Garbage and Tears for Fears, that were always on my bucket list. And I always seemed to miss them, you know? So it was kind of a like, and my wife really had a great time. And so that was worth it. But I'm very selective about, I'll let a band pass.
So I had the experience again this past Saturday. So Deb and I have friends, that are huge Pink fans, and Pink is playing two nights at Fenway Park, and it's not just Pink. So Pink is obviously the headliner, but Brandi Carlile is the middle act, and Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo are the opening act. And I was like, that's a pretty solid lineup. And I had tickets in the basket. You know, I had found some, and I pinged everybody. I was like, I can't do it without talking to everybody. I was like, guys, I was like, look, I have them. They're okay seats, but it's $1,600 for these four tickets.
Right?
$1,600. And part of that is, do you know that, and I read this in an article yesterday, that the fees tacked on to the tickets through Ticketmaster are almost 80% of what the ticket price is.
Yeah. No doubt.
And those fees, you know, like a lot of people are like, well, fuck Ticketmaster, right? You know, they're the ones that fee. That fee is divided, at least based upon this article, amongst the venue, the promoters, the artists, and Ticketmaster. So not only is the artist benefiting by the ticket price, but they are now benefiting by the fees as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And music has become a big business. That's it. I mean, all these acts, they have a social media to promote them, so they have no problem getting the hype going, you know? And then it just turns into a vacuum cleaner for money.
Well, you know, the crappy thing about it is that it has a trickle down effect, you know, because I used to be of the mindset, well, you know, look, if Metallica and Springsteen are charging, you know, big money, you know, maybe this is the opportunity to start seeing bands that are up and coming in smaller venues that maybe don't have the same production and cachet or whatever it is. But even those things, like, you know, normally a band that you would see at the Paradise, you know, or, you know, at a jazz club, you know, for that used to be $30. Now it's $90.
Yeah. Yeah, about 6 years ago, I think it was, I went to see the Black Angels. I told you the story in this small club. They're a band out of Austin, Texas. They're kind of like the psyched rock, like very heavy psychedelic, you know, a lot of reverb on the guitars, which I like. I just like the Black Angels. And I think I paid fucking, I don't know, $40 for the ticket, $40. It was in a small club that probably couldn't hold. There was no seats. It was a bar. It was literally like a bar with a stage, right? Probably held like, I don't know, 200 people, you know? And that was great. You know, I got to see a band I liked for like $30, $40, you know?
Yeah. It's all proportional now. So, you know, the reason I missed the show last week, as you know, is I went to see The Smile. So, Tom York, Timmy York, and Bobby Greenwood.
I cringed. I said, fuck!
Timmy York and Bobby Greenwood of TV Head. So they played this place called the Roadrunner. So Tom York and Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead, they have an offshoot band called The Smile, which, by the way, great record. If you haven't listened to it, you really should.
Right.
And I know that you're at least a passive Radiohead fan, yeah, probably absolutely. More than that.
Yeah.
But their ticket prices were relatively reasonable. But get this, and I know it's coming across like we're two old guys complaining about everything's too expensive now. But I was there with my son. So at the Roadrunner.
Voice again.
It was at the Road.
That's too expensive.
Dude, me and you, we're turning to the two old guys in the Muppet Theater up in the balcony.
I think we're actually preaching for the people. We can buy these tickets, but we understand, you know, we're not pretentious.
It's getting so, you know, crazy. So again, you know, Zach and I go to this show and I was like, hey, I'm going to go up and get a drink. You know, do you want anything? He was like, just grab me a bottle of water. I got a Maker's Mark on the rocks,
in
a bottle, of water. $27.
You're asking for it, buddy. I know. It's fucking
$27.
A bottle is like $8 for a fucking bottle of water. It's fucking crazy.
$27.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic for another time. Hey, have you ever been to a show in this strange phenomenon? The whole row in front of you, literally 50 seats, is empty. Have you ever had that happen?
Yes. Yeah.
Me and Phil Kelly went to see Depeche Mode up at what used to be Tanglewood. It's changed its name 17 times since. But you know where it is. And it's an amphitheater. And the fucking it's sold out. And people are like, you know, those little chairs, you're standing up elbow to elbow. And I'm looking at this whole empty row. Right. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I just tap Phil and I go, come on. So we just step over and we move down a couple. We separate by about 3 seats, you know, and we had the whole row to ourselves. And somebody taps me on the shoulder and they said, dude says, hey, do you mind if we come into your row? they thought we bought the whole row. Yeah, come on. It's all right. Yeah, come on in. Come on down.
So what did you say Tanglewood was? What kind of a theater was it?
It's an amphitheater. Amphitheater. Don't fuck with me. If you notice during the new intro for Great White Outsource, I say www. I heard you cracking up three shows ago. WWW. So what? I call it WWW. I'm old school.
Here we are. Scott
McLean. WW2.
I'm broadcasting from the February Ampin Theater.
No, February. Say it right.
February.
Yeah. There you go.
So, hey, let's back up a little bit. So when you were saying fuck you to Bruce Springsteen, you also included John Mellencamp. Why was that?
That fucking piece of shit. There was a picture of him on Twitter at the Indianapolis Colts game the other day, last Sunday. And they played the national anthem. He's up in the booths. Everybody's standing up for the national anthem. He just sits. He sat for the national anthem.
So, intentionally, like he was protesting.
He's a big fan of Colin Kaepernick. That's where it ends up. He's a big fan of that. This fucker, ain't that America? And little pink houses and fucking ROCK in the USA. You know what? ROCK up your ass. If I saw John Mellencamp right now, I'd bitch slap him. I don't care. Security and none. I'll fuck them up too. I bitch slap that old bastard. You want to be that guy? You fucking made your career on being all American? Jack and Diane. Fucking the
Hey, leave me
album.
Out of it. Leave me out of it.
Oh, well, I'm Diane evidently to you because you've called me that.
Easy there, big boy,
you know,
sucking
the
on chili dogs.
Album, everything is, you know. Everything's America, all American. This motherfucker sits for the national anthem.
And he either said, or it was reported that he did it intentionally because of his, belief or shared belief with Colin Kaepernick.
Let me see if I took the, see.
And by the way, I'm not doubting you. I'm just not aware of this incident.
Here it is right here. It says, Mellencamp is one of America's greatest frauds, dot, 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 always has been. And then someone on Twitter named Mr. Dent, and it's at MrDent78. Can we get a comment on John Mellencamp being too lazy to stand for our national anthem? And there's the picture of him. It's right. My camera doesn't really get a good zoom, but I think
yeah, you
get
can't really see it, but I believe yeah. you. I believe you. But there's a big difference to me between being kind of a little bit out of it and maybe a little bit lazy to stand up. And I'm not supporting that by any means. There's a big difference between just being an asshole and making a blatant political statement by not standing up for it.
Right.
And well, you know my position on this, or at least I think you know my position on it. You know, I don't get it. I think that people, you know, should question their government, and I think that people should protest if something is wrong. But I do think that people should have some loyalty to the country that has afforded them so much.
So let's see. Let me pull up the article. There's a lot of articles on it, actually.
America, not a perfect place, but certainly a lot better than some other places. And,
let me see. Mellencamp was in a box high above Lucas Oil Stadium, and one NFL fan snapped the picture and sent it to Outkick 360's Dan Dakich. The singer was seen sitting and eating popcorn while others, and there's little kids, there's children standing around him, standing up for the national anthem. The 71-year-old in the past has been an open supporter of former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick and the Black Lives Matter. Oh, that's a phone call.
Is somebody calling into the show?
Hey, you're on Milk Crates and Turntables.
Hello, is this the Mr. X show?
Yeah, I think you got the wrong show. This is Milk Crates and Turntables, a music podcast. Who's this?
Oh, this is the Unknown Stooshin.
The Unknown Stooshin? Hey, do you like music?
I love music. What do you guys, what kind of music?
I don't know. What's your favorite music, Unknown Stooshin? Who has my phone number?
Well, I saw it on the billboard today, by the way, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
I like every kind of music, rock, everything. You guys do a great job. So,
do you go to concerts?
Only with you two.
Oh.
Jack, you know, I know who it is now. Now I know who it is. I wasn't sure initially.
Who is it?
Hi, Fetus.
It's the one and only, the mysterious Phil Kelly that we always talk Phil about Kelly. Going to concerts. He's been to as many concerts as us.
Oh, maybe as more.
The great line your mother used to say all the time, hello, fetus, the fallopian tubes. Sit down, have some meat. Right?
So, yeah, so what are you up to, was, Phil?
So I just got out of work. I worked part-time job at FedEx on my way home, guys. So I just wanted to call in for the Thanksgiving episode.
Well, I got a question for you. What's your favorite concert that you ever saw? What's the one concert that you?
So, I would say there's sort of different things, but two favorite concerts, and I know I can't split the lines. Roger Waters' The Wall may have been the best concert I've ever seen, which was a huge production. And maybe the simplest concert I've ever seen, Jack, was?
You too.
Before that, at the Orpheum, we would exchange tickets.
Oh, wow. The first time we got to see the Pretenders.
Exactly. They were great. When Pretenders 2 came out.
Yeah. We saw them. We saw them early. We were blessed to be able to see the original band.
Yeah. Which had the Adulteress and everything and great. I mean, we've seen so many together, but.
Absolutely.
Great shows.
I thought for sure, Phil, you would say the greatest concert you've ever seen was Gwar. Was Gwar at the Channel.
So Jack, when I work at FedEx, I had to deliver to the House of Blues last Saturday, and they had the Spartan race at Fenway Park, and it was a little busy, but it was a beautiful day last Saturday. And I'm banging on the door, clank, 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 clank. All right, the guy comes out and goes, "Oh, sorry, you know," I'm like, "Yeah, no worries, don't worry about it," and everything. Go into the main concert hall there. And I go, "Geez, this is a great place. I've seen so many shows here, the Black Crowes, the stuff like that." He goes, "Oh yeah, it was a great show." And he goes, "Hey," and it's with FedEx, you bring like the concert shirts or the Bruin shirts. Long story short, "Oh, we're gonna bring them backstage, no problem," and everything. And I go, "Oh, by the way, I saw another band here, Gwar." And he goes, "Yeah, we learned our lesson on that one. We sent them to the Palladium after that."
A little too messy.
Too much
K Rose syrup and red dye number two.
Didn't ask, just looked at him. Okay,
and she knew exactly what he was talking about. Yeah,
of course. So,
if anyone listening hasn't heard of Gwar, or if people that have heard of Gwar but have never seen them in concert, you got to go on YouTube and check out a Gwar concert. It is something like you've never seen in your life. First time I saw them, you can't even be prepared for it. You can get told all about it, but you can't be prepared for it. Just not.
Yeah.
The first time Gwar was introduced, Jack, your brother came over to my house. We were kids. And remember, my father comes up, "Philip, Jimmy's downstairs." And Jimmy used to come over occasionally and whatever, you know, sit down and have a deal with my father. He goes, "You have to go downstairs." "All right, yeah. Okay, come on. Come upstairs," and everything. My father gave him a beer, and he comes upstairs and he's covered with blood. I'm like, "All right, what happened? He goes, You have to go see this band." I'm like, "All right, I'll take you home right now, Jimmy. We'll go right now." And I walked them back. But they were the ultimate band to see, without a doubt.
The original lineup.
When Jimmy first started to go see the band Gwar, he was so proud of it. There were a lot of people that didn't even know who they were. But he would take public transportation back covered in that fake blood. And he would just sit there with that goofy smile of his.
His smile was comparable to, you remember Full Metal Jacket when the guy's sitting on the toilet before he shoots a sergeant?
I am in a world of shit.
Yeah.
Just that look. Yeah, the great look.
Well, the whole goal of a Gwar concert is to see how much blood you can get on you. Like,
without a doubt.
They don't avoid it. They try to jump into it, which is a whole nother thing.
So do you either of you still have a shirt covered in blood that you
have left? Can't say that I do.
I do not.
Can't say that I do. Do you?
Fucking lightweights, of course.
Now we're talking 35 years ago, right? 40 years ago. And you still got the t-shirt with the Gwar blood on it. God rest in peace.
May Odorous
Urungus rest in peace.
There is not a more perfect shirt to wear for Thanksgiving dinner.
You're right.
Jack, can you name the members of Gwar?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So you had Odorous Urungus. You had Slaymeister Hyman, right?
Slaymeister Hyman.
What is it?
Slaymeister Hyman,
yeah. So give us the names, Jack. I mean, Phil.
Beefcake the Mighty, Sleazy P. Martini.
The best.
Yeah. Techno Destructo. and I think that's it.
Yeah.
We'll have to call in Jimmy to go.
We'll have to call in Jimmy. Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Well, all right, buddy. Listen.
Jimmy would be interesting.
All right.
Thanks for the call, my friend.
Oh, guys, happy Thanksgiving. Love you. God bless you.
Love you too, buddy.
God bless you. Love you too, Phil. Take care, man.
Take care. All right. You too.
Ah, the infamous Phil Kelly calls in.
Phil's the best. Hey, I didn't realize. When did you start taking phone calls on this show?
I had my phone on. I just had my phone on.
Oh, so it was unintentional.
He called, yeah. Yeah. He had said something in a text earlier, but I didn't believe him. He never calls. It's always texting with him. So.
Phil is one of the best concert wingmen ever.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just great guy. Go with the flow. Yep. You know, always up for everything. Yep. You know, just he's the best.
And he'd be up for a fight too if he needed to.
I don't think I've ever seen Phil. I mean, you know me. I'm not a fighter.
Yeah, I've seen him scuffle. You know, he's like 6'1". He's not a small guy. Yeah. He looks like Kevin McHale. I always said he looked like Kevin McHale.
I was talking to the guy across the hall from me in the office the other day. We were for some reason we got onto the subject of being kids and scrapping and that type of thing. And he's this goofy, obnoxious guy. And I was like, so when you were younger, how many fights? You know, let me rephrase that. How often did you get beat up when you were a kid? He goes, you are an asshole. Yeah.
Hey, let's switch gears for a minute. Do you have any Thanksgiving songs? Did you make a list of Thanksgiving songs?
Well, I mean, there's really only one Thanksgiving song that I play every year, and you know, it started off on record and then probably moved to cassette and CD, and now it's digital. But while I'm preparing, you know, whether it's peeling potatoes or wrapping scallops and bacon or whatever, I still listen to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie every Thanksgiving.
Oh, all right. It's cool.
And I listen to the whole thing and I love it. I could probably recite half of it.
It's a great story. Oh, it's a great story.
A great story told with, there's a lot of humor in it. And I do like his attitude in it.
Yeah.
And it still makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the things that is kind of a bummer about it. So, you know, Arlo Guthrie, son of Woody Guthrie, who was at Woodstock, and Alice's Restaurant probably is his biggest hit and what he was most known for back in the day. It's kind of a sad thing to see that he does still tour around every Thanksgiving and does kind of this updated version of Alice's Restaurant, which, by the way, for our audience that is out there, if you've never listened to it, I don't know the exact timing of it, but it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 27, 28 minutes. It's an entire side of an album.
Yeah.
And he's tried to recreate it and to bring it more up to date through like the Iraqi war and whatnot. And it's just a pathetic attempt to revive something that, It's just like
it was a moment in time. It was a moment in time.
Yeah, you know, there are some songs that shouldn't be remade. Just like there are some movies, just leave it alone.
Yeah, well, Hollywood can't do that.
I know. Sooner or later, somebody's going to want to remake The Godfather or Jaws or The Shawshank Redemption, and they're just going to destroy it.
Yeah, actually, I heard Bradley Cooper will be. He'll be playing the part of what's his name? Steve McQueen's character in Bullet, like Jim Bullet or something. I think the guy's name was. So Bradley Cooper is going to be playing that character, which I could see that. See, that's good. You know what I mean? Bradley Cooper's a good actor.
Yeah, but you know, replacing Bradley Cooper,
Steve McQueen. That's a tough call.
You know, look, I don't know, maybe there are just different levels, but it doesn't bother me so much that he's making, you know, remaking Bullet. I don't regard Bullet as being like...
It's like a part two. It's not, they're not, you know, remaking it, but...
Yeah.
There are
just some things that you should just leave alone.
Yeah, there's certain characters you can't replace. You know what I mean? There really is characters that shouldn't be messed with, but yet they do. So...
From a cover standpoint, and I'm sure that there are a bunch of them out there, but you know, look, there's some great cover songs out there, and there's some songs that probably shouldn't be covered. Like, yeah, nobody should be covering Stairway to Heaven.
Exactly.
Just leave it alone.
Not even Greta Van Fleet.
No, No, I look, I know it at the what is it, the presidential awards, Hart did like a live version of it, which was great, but I don't know. Just
it
just
got accolades because they pulled it off. They pulled it off their version, and it got a lot of accolades. And it was their version. It was very it's a hard song to live up to if you're gonna try to do it. It can either crush you or it can make you. And those girls, those ladies are veterans, and I'm sure that they picked that song and worked their asses off to get it right, because that is such one of those songs that you just, if you miss a note, it's going to be noticed.
Yeah, there's some songs out there that just leave them alone. Yeah, there's just no way that you're going to be able to outdo the originals, so just do something different.
So I came up with a playlist of songs for Thanksgiving.
Okay. Right?
Let me go over them. And we can touch on some, maybe we can't. Now, I look at songs about Thanksgiving being food, family, friends, and being thankful. Because that's basically what Thanksgiving is for. You know, it's my favorite holiday. This year, we only have 10 people. Usually, we got 16, 17 people. So, it's a small Thanksgiving. But I always want to be around friends. Everyone should have a place to go on Thanksgiving. So I got these songs. Maybe you've heard of some of them. Maybe you haven't. Did you know that Ray Davies did a Thanksgiving Day, a song called Thanksgiving Day?
I'm not familiar with that.
It's actually pretty cool. It's almost in the light of Father Christmas.
Okay.
Right. So it's actually, it's a Ray Davies song, and it's actually pretty good. You have, then I have Ode to My Family by the Cranberries. Right.
Okay.
She was such, I watched that video today. She was fucking adorable. She, Dolores O'Riordan was just fucking adorable. I mean, she really was. What a
very talented woman
she was. That is one of those deaths that I just, that they don't usually affect me, but that one kind of bothered me. She was just like, why the fuck her? And I've said this on this show before. Like, why her? Like, she was just a nice person. Anyways, then Harvest Moon, Neil Young.
Oh, God.
I know, but it's listen, it's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. What?
No, you finish what you're doing, but we need to talk about Neil Young once you're done with your list.
Okay, all right. Then you have the listen, you're a fan of this, the Vince Guaraldi Trio with the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving theme,
Vince,
right?
Guaraldi Trio, yes.
Guaraldi, yeah. Autumn in New York, Billie Holiday. It's basically just her and a piano, right? It's just her and a piano, and it's recorded in that old-time style of recording. You can tell it's a dated recording, but it's still fucking Billie Holiday. Then you got, it was originally done by just James Taylor, but he brought in Ray Charles to spice it up, right? And the song is called Sweet Potato Pie. It's cool. It's a fun song. It's just, all these songs are fun, or they're, you know. Then you have Johnny Cash did a song called Thanksgiving Prayer in the typical Johnny Cash style. Very slow, methodic, tells his story, right? And you got James Brown with Nate Kendrick and the Swans singing Mashed Potatoes. Right? That's a good one. But not to be outdone, the JBs came up with their song, Pass the Peas.
Oh, God.
Which you've actually heard that. I know you've heard that song. You just don't know.
I'm sure I have.
That's the name of it. Because I listened to it. I said, I've heard this before. Just didn't know what they were saying. Right? Then you got your guy, your boy, your man, your singer, Dave Matthews Band.
Cornbread?
There you go, buddy. Yeah. Cornbread, yeah. Bing Crosby, I got plenty to be thankful for, and it's kind of a precursor to the holiday music, and you can see that Bing Crosby had that style, that holiday style, and he put it into that. That was from 1942, but it has some good vibes in it, right? Then Thank You for Being a Friend, Andrew Gold. That's a classic. That's a 70s
love
classic.
That song.
All That Meat and No Potatoes by Fats Waller. Right? That's Waller. Jazz guy, right? Trumpeter?
Pianist.
Th- Thanksgiving song by Mary Chapin Carpenter. It's kind of slow, but it's a Thanksgiving song. I'm not a big fan of hers, but then you got of all the songs, you know, Sly and the Family Stone, Thank You for Letting Me Be a Friend. I like this song. It's one of their kind of obscure songs. It's called Thankful and Thoughtful by Sly and the Family Stone. It's a nice song. It's a good song. Then jumping into the modern day, this is 2000s, early 2000s, Dido, Thank You, right? And you got Apples, Peaches, and Pumpkin Pie by Jay and the Techniques. Apples, Peaches, Pumpkin Pie. You've heard it. It's a 70s tune.
Sure I have.
You've
sure.
heard it, right? Autumn Leaves by Nat King Cole. Everything. Then you got Stuffy Turkey. Who does Stuffy Turkey? It's right in your jazz alley.
I have no idea, but that's got to be, I don't know, Cannonball Adderley.
I believe he's a piano player, right? He's got a really odd first name. His last name is kind of like being a priest. He's not a priest, but he's a TM.
Thelonious Monk.
There you go, buddy. Piano player, right?
Pianist, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a difference? Pianist, no. Piano player? You could have just said yeah.
I think pianist sounds a little bit more elevated. Thelonious Monk.
Of course, that's you and me. You're a little more posh. I'm down with the people. My tickets would be $50. Yours would be $2,500.
So listen. If you and I were walking through New York City in the 50s and you were able to encounter Thelonious Monk, I wouldn't walk up to him and say, "Oh, you're the piano player, aren't you?" It kind of diminishes who he is. Aside from saying, "Oh my God, it's Thelonious Monk, you're the great pianist."
I'd say you're the piano player, right? I wouldn't say that. I don't care. And he would look at me and say, "Yeah, yeah, I am." Yeah,
he probably would.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, more than likely, he would ignore both of us.
More than likely.
He was a cantankerous. He was a kooky guy, man.
Would he punk us like Chuck Berry punked you?
I don't think that Thelonious Monk would even acknowledge us. I think he would just walk by.
I think that might be one of the funniest stories you ever told me. I cannot forget that. I can't get that image out of my head. you can take my picture, but I ain't stopping.
He said, "You can take my picture. You can take my picture, but I ain't posing for it." And push me out of the way. which again is so much better than if he said, "Yeah, I'll take my picture."
It's so much better. That is some serious bragging rights right there.
Yeah.
You ever been shoved by Chuck Berry?
Chuck Berry.
Not bumped, not pushed, shoved.
And by the way, I'm not a small guy.
No, by no means. Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost done here. I got Everybody Eats When They Come to My House by the great and as unique as they come, Cab Calloway. As unique as they've ever made, God's ever made. Cab Calloway was a unique character. And finally, Take Me Home Country Roads, the late John Denver. I wouldn't say great. Would you say great?
I think John Denver was certainly an icon in the 70s.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give him the moniker of great. 70s great.
John Denver was great for what he did.
He was a hit machine. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Had a tremendous amount of success.
He had the
let me ask you, and I'm not criticizing you. Is this a playlist that you've gathered over years? Or is this something that you pulled off of Spotify or something you found online?
No, I looked online for songs because Thanksgiving is like one of the only holidays that there's really a major holiday that there's really no soundtrack to it.
No,
the 4th of July is you got all those fake John Mellencamp and Bruce Springsteen songs, right? Right? You got all the Christmas songs. You got New Year's songs. You have holiday songs, right? If you want to hear an Easter song, go to church.
Yeah.
Right? You can hear that.
Yeah.
But it's really, even New Year's has songs. But Thanksgiving, the arguably the biggest holiday of the year, right? It's homecoming. You know, people come home from college. People fly in from all. It's the most, what, the day before Thanksgiving is the most traveled day of the year, right? So it's a big family event. And there's no fucking, like, nothing ever stuck with it. No songs ever stuck.
Is there a soundtrack to the house? Like, do you guys play music while you're having Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah.
Maybe something low in the background, you know?
Dr. Vera likes to put on, like, she'll say Irish classical or Christmas classical, on Alexa. It's very low. So I just say,
it's a nice thing. Puts people at ease, right?
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice background. It's not a soundtrack like this. So I had Doug. Do you have something playing in the background?
Yeah. We'll put on like a chill or a light jazz. Or, you know, again, it's not, you don't want anything with a lot of vocals that's going to be intrusive and to stop conversation. You know, I mean, it's background music.
Yeah, exactly. So, and sometimes, you know, she likes, classical Christmas, because we already put the Christmas tree up. We haven't decorated it, just got put up. And I'm retired and some days I have nothing to do, so I'm going to put up the tree. What the hell? Hey, listen, I think you should celebrate Christmas as long as you can, because once it's gone, then the rest of the year is just fucking drag. Yeah, we got to start up again. I'm a big holiday guy. I like jumping into it and absorbing it. Yeah, it was fucking 75 degrees here yesterday, and I had the fireplace going. Just because. Wait, there it is. Shh. I heard it. I was doing the show at Mark Smith last week, and like fucking clockwork, train goes by his house. And he knew exactly where it was going. He said, that's the eastbound train going to blah, 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 blah. I was like, damn.
Yeah, but that's there Mark.
Where are you going? Where's your train going?
More than likely, that train is heading toward either Boston or Portland. I can't tell, and I don't know the schedule well enough to tell if it's going north or south.
Is it a commuter train or is it a freight train?
There's two of them that will actually pass through Dover. There is an Amtrak commuter train called the Acela. I think it's called the Acela. Oh, the Downeaster, I think it's called, which runs from Portland to Boston. And then it takes you right into, so you can go from Portland, Maine to North Station in Boston.
Downtown Boston.
So it stops, you know, Dover is one of the stops. Portsmouth is one of the stops. There's a bunch of them. But the wacky thing, and I don't know why or how they did this, but, you know, Boston being the goofy town that it is, if you want to go from Portland to New York, you can take the train from Portland to Boston, but then you have to jump on the T, because the Portland to Boston train lets you off at North Station. The train that goes to New York leaves from South Station.
Yes, on the other side, almost the town.
So you have to trek across town if you actually want to go somewhere beyond, you know, New England.
Yeah,
you know that North Station, for whatever reason, is really more the commuter trains.
Yeah. All right. So you wanted to say something about Neil Young.
Yeah, so I got to tell you, you know, so we talked a little bit about Mellencamp, we talked a little bit about Springsteen kind of going off the rails, and Neil Young is doing the same thing. I think that Neil Young is absolutely losing his fucking mind.
Yeah,
I mean, first off, you know, I don't know whether it was last year or the year before where, you know, he had that whole issue with Joe Rogan being a, COVID, you know, vax denier, whatever you want to call
it. Which he was right in the end. He was fucking right.
Well, so. Whatever. I don't know whether he was right or not. I can't. Well, shut up for a second. Well, for crying out loud.
Go on.
See, happy this is what happens.
Asshole.
This is what happens when you keep me on beyond an hour. I get tired and cranky.
Well, the show might start getting good now.
I don't have it, the stamina of a Mark, you know, Smith. Or a
Lou Calicchio,
or any of those guys, you know. I mean, hey, you know, I can only do what I can do. But in any event, you know, Neil Young, you know, made this big stink about, you know, look, you know, I can't be on Spotify if you're going to have Joe Rogan on, because he is a, a vax denier and people are dying and I'm going to pull my music off. And the end result was, you know what? Nobody really gave a shit.
No one gives a shit.
So, you know, a year or 2 years, whatever the timing is.
It was Neil less Young than is, that. He's back on it.
Neil Young, no, he is not on Spotify.
I don't really.
He is not on Spotify, and I heard him on an interview, and you had referenced him earlier. He was on an interview with Howard Stern, and he said, he was like, look, I don't need Spotify. And he was like, by the way, the sound quality on Spotify is terrible, so I'm going to stay off it. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. What I'm here to talk about is that Neil Young's latest thing.
Hold on. Neil Young. 3,707,065 monthly listeners.
Play Harvest.
Let's see. Neil Young. Harvestman.
It certainly sounds like Neil Young.
It is.
Wait, whoa.
Yeah, that's not him.
That is not Neil Young.
Let me see. Yeah, I mean, I could look through here, but I think
He's not on there. But here's the thing. He's going off the rails. So the thing that he announced just in the last day or two, he announced that he will no longer perform live at venues that serve factory farmed animal products.
Oh, what's he fucking? He's starting to steal from Morrissey?
I will no longer perform at venues that serve factory farmed animal products. Now think about that for a second. Neil Young is a pretty popular, touring artist, and he's playing places that are conceivably, 15,000-20,000 seats. And he's demanding that these venues now offer, basically kind of sustainable farm to table. And I get it. I understand the concept and, his position on it that factory farm animals are detrimental to the environment, blah, blah, blah. But there's only so much you can do, man.
Well, Morrissey, when he played Madison Square Garden, when we went to see him, he said no meat products. I'm not playing here. If you're going to, and they shut it down, all the hot dogs and burger stuff.
That's crazy.
Oh, the place is packed. They're making money no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, not everybody shares your perspective. Not everybody shares the fact of, being a vegetarian or vegan.
The thing is, with Morrissey, like I was saying, he walked out of a show last week, 30 minutes into it, because it was too cold. When you go to a Morrissey show, you got to expect these things. He's very... what do you call it? What's the word when they're,
he's an asshole.
Look,
so not for nothing,
but when Neil Young, is like, now I'm not
for nothing. Morrissey, you're being eccentric. An asshole.
He's very eccentric.
I don't give a shit if he's what he is. People paid money to go see him. They paid for parking. They paid to go out to dinner. They paid for babysitting or whatever, they are in the same environment that he's in. He's probably in a better environment. They probably have heaters on the stage. So, you suck it up.
What, for walking out on the show?
By the way, on December 4th, Deb and I are going to see Morrissey.
Are you really?
Yeah, he's playing at the MGM. He's playing at Fenway.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good luck.
Last show of the tour. But it's the very first time that when I bought the tickets on Ticketmaster, I actually paid for the insurance.
I'm telling you, I was a couple of years ago before COVID, I was going to fly up there to see him at the Orpheum. And a good thing I didn't buy the tickets because he canceled that show. So,
yeah,
It's a roll of the dice. I've been fortunate. I'm 2 for 2. I hope you get to see him. But don't expect a lot of Smith songs.
He plays, I've looked at a
he
couple.
He plays like
of
three Smith songs a show, maybe four.
Yeah, somewhere I thought between like 4 and 6.
Not even that many. He does all, I mean, he has a larger catalog of his music than he does with Smith's, but he throws the Smith song, and it's interesting to see which ones you get. Like, you know what I mean? He might come out like I saw him in Miami, and he came out with an encore with Asleep, which he hasn't played in concert in years. So it's interesting that sometimes he plays How Soon Is Now, sometimes he doesn't.
Yep. You know? Yeah, he bounces back and forth. No,
it's always interesting
to
see what you get. But it'll
be interesting to see what Morrissey does when he and Johnny Marr finally get back together.
That ain't happening. After he told Johnny Marr, just fucking keep my name out of your mouth. Can you do an interview without my name coming out of your mouth? He said that. That ain't happening, buddy.
Just like Oasis will get together. Yeah, just like, hey, did you see that Blur is reuniting and playing at Wembley?
Ah, that's surprising. Well, not surprising. It's not surprising. He is a machine. Damon Albarn is a machine.
He's positioning it as one show. I'm hoping that it's not. I mean,
he's focused on Gorillaz. You know,
bring it over to the States for a show or two. If you're going to go through all of the rehearsals and to get everybody together, do more than one show. Like, it's such a crime. It's such a crime that Led Zeppelin did that one show at the O2 in London and didn't do one in the United States.
How much would you pay to see Blur? I know a lot of people out there are like, who's Blur? But how much would you pay to see Blur?
I'd pay two.
I'd go like 250. That would be the highest I would go for that. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But he's very good. He doesn't touch anything Blur when he does all this Gorillaz stuff.
I haven't seen him up to this point, and my life is just fine.
Yeah. Who, Blur?
I haven't seen Blur in concert, and my life is just fine with not having seen them.
He kind of did a quick reference to him the first time we saw him in Miami. It was at a outdoor venue, and they always start the show off with M1A1. And at one point, there's this high crescendo, and he gave out a woohoo. That's the closest he's ever come to doing it. And he's never done it. The other times I've seen it, he hasn't done that. So it was kind of cool that he did that, but he never ventures into that world anymore. But sorry. So let's start wrapping this up. I got you on overtime right now. So I'm going to give you the top 10 this week in 2004. Gets a little shady in the early 2000s. Gets a little shady.
All right.
Gets a little let's hard. Hear it. Gets a little hard.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So we got number 10 this week in 2004. Let's Go by Trick Daddy featuring Lil Jon and Twista. Lil Jon went on to become really big. Number 9 this week in 2004, Lean Back by the Terror Squad. Number 8 this week in 2004, Breakaway by Kelly Clarkson. That's when she was starting to hit her peak. Number 7 this week in 2004, She Will Be Loved by Maroon 5. Number 6 this week, I know, Just Lose It by Eminem.
I hate that band.
I know, they really are one of those bands, right? number 6 was Just Lose It by Eminem. Number 5, Over and Over, Nelly featuring Tim McGraw. That was the first crossover of rap and country. That song was the first crossover between rap and country. It actually became a small thing. Then some people call it country and rap equals crap, right? So number 4, Lose My Breath by Destiny's Child. They were getting ready to break up. Number 3, Goodies by Sierra featuring Petey Pablo. Number 2, Drop It Like It's Hot, Snoop Dogg featuring Pharrell, who is a brilliant producer. in his own right. And number one this week in 2004, My Boo by Usher and Alicia Keys. Usher is a very underrated entertainer, I think.
Wait a minute. You think Usher is underrated?
I do. I don't think he gets that because he's not on the radar much. Like, he doesn't continue on. But I think this generation, I could ask this generation. Huh?
I think he's pretty damn popular.
I don't know. I just don't think he gets that the accolades that he deserves. But, hey, listen, what is that? You know what time it is now, Jack.
It's time to go make a sandwich.
I'll try to be quick. On this day, November 22nd, in 2019, Polestar published their list of the top touring artists of the 2010s in North America. Who do you think came in first?
The 2010s. Dave Matthews Band.
No. Okay, you too.
Just that year?
Yeah. The 2010s. The 2010s. Right?
I understand. All right, you don't have to yell at me.
$1,038,104,132. Rolling Stones came in second. Let's see. In 2016, Johnny Cash's house went up for sale, whatever. In 2005, on this day in 2005, Poems written by Bob Dylan. Oh, did you hear the fucking controversy with him now?
Bob Dylan? What's his deal? What?
So he had this book. He had this book that is a book of poems, right? Or some shit like that, some writings. And it went for $600 because he signed it. Right?
Yeah.
Some people started to notice all the signatures look exactly the same. You can look this article up. They look exactly the same. Someone's like, what's up with this? The fucking publishing company said, it's his signature, but we just used the machine to print it on the... They like tried to reword this whole thing. Number one, who the fuck is buying a book by Bob Dylan for $600? Number one.
Look,
I'll pay $600 to go see Blur before I pay for a book by Bob Dylan.
I am a huge, huge Bob Dylan fan, and I wouldn't pay $600 for his book.
But the fucking signature was fake. It was.
I know.
Oh, it's his real signature. We just did it electronically, and anyways, someone bought a book from his college days for $78,000. Who cares? On this day in 2005. A gig by former Stone Roses frontman Ian Brown was abandoned after 20 minutes because the floor at the venue began to sag. Oh, shit. 2,000 people were told to leave Newcastle's Carling Academy, which only had been open for a month. Organizers said it was simply a safety precaution after Joyce under the main dance floor came out of their springs. Ah, simply a safety problem. What would you do if you stand all of a sudden the floor starts to buckle under you? Oh, shit. What the fuck? Let's see. On this day in 2004, U2 shot the video for All Because of You from a moving flatbed truck on the streets of Brooklyn, New York. Later in the day, they performed a brief concert under the Brooklyn Bridge, which was taped by MTV. That was for the... Not All You Can Take With You. How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. That was that album, right?
I think it was No Line on the Horizon, I thought.
No, not in 2004.
No Line on the Horizon was definitely later.
Yeah, I think it was How to Dismantle Atomic Bomb.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
You're probably right. I by the way, I don't understand that.
What's that?
Yeah, you have that whole thing set up under the Brooklyn Bridge. You know, if you're a band and you love music, why a short set? Play the whole fucking thing.
Dude, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Play a whole show.
Yeah. I mean, they got away with it with The Streets Have No Names. They got away with it then. You can't.
Yeah.
It's like, on this day in 2004, Ozzy Osbourne struggled with a burglar who escaped with jewelry worth about... £2 million from his Buckinghamshire mansion. Osbourne told reporters that he had the masked raider in a headlock. Can you picture this?
Can you imagine the guy being in the headlock? Can I have your autograph?
Who the fuck? What kind of pussy do you have to be to let Ozzy Osbourne get you in a headlock? Holy shit. He said he had him in the headlock as he tried to stop him. The burglar broke free and jumped 30 feet from the first floor window. You're that afraid of Ozzy Osbourne? What? That got to be the biggest pussy robber in the world. Jesus Christ. A large amount of jewelry was stolen in the raid. Just two burglars were involved. Anyways, on this day in 2002, the surviving members of The Doors, Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger, announced they would record and tour again with the new lineup, including, can you tell me who was in the new lineup back then in 2002?
Ian Astbury.
Yeah, I know you get the singer, right? The drummer, I think you'll be surprised. Stuart Copeland. Stuart Copeland.
I think it was the guy from The Police.
I just told you. Original drummer John Densmore was not able to take part because he's suffering from severe tinnitus. Dude, I have tinnitus, and I'll tell you what, at night, it's fucking loud in my head. It's the ringing kind, not the hissing kind. It's fucking loud. It gets loud every night.
You think it would be helpful if you actually got like a white noise machine?
That's how I sleep. That's the only way I can sleep. Is
with a white noise.
Yeah, that's the only way because it's technically the sound of silence. Silence is actually loud.
Yeah, sure.
If you're in a room, it's loud. But that tinnitus in my ears, it's in both of them. It started off my left, now it's in my right. And I'll never get rid of it. It's not torturous though. I kind of keep it under wraps, but it freaked me out at first. It was very stressful. But you just kind of learn to live with it. So I feel for that guy. 1998, Alanis Morissette was at number one on the U.S. album chart with her fourth album, Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie. The first single from the album, Thank You, received a Grammy Award nomination for Best Female Pop Vocal. On this day, it was a sad day on this day in 1997. INXS frontman Michael Hutchins was found dead in a Sydney hotel suite, having taken his own life. The 37-year-old who co-founded the best-selling Australian band in 1977 was beloved for his emotive vocals and captivating live performance. The New York Post did an article on him. Whoever wrote the article basically recapped the documentary Mystify. But they said they did kind of compare him. He was kind of a cross between Mick Jagger and I forget who else they compared him to. It kind of got me thinking, you know what? He did have that swagger. He did have that persona.
He was a great front man.
He was a great front man. Talk about a guy who doesn't get credit where credit is due when you talk about great front men. Like I always say, Scott Weiland doesn't get credit for being a great front man. I mean, that dude, now Layne Staley, he didn't do much. He had a great voice. He was a great singer for that band. When you talk about a front man, I saw the Stone Temple Pilots twice. Scott Weiland was a fucking great front man.
Fantastic.
On this day in 1994, Pearl Jam released their third studio album, Vitalogy, which was first released on vinyl and became the first vinyl album to appear in the U.S. chart since the domination of the compact disc format. That's interesting for 1994. They were kind of ahead of their time doing that. I'll give their promotional people credit that one. But it didn't catch on. Like the vinyl thing just didn't really catch on. They followed the release in other formats 2 weeks later, whereupon it became the second fastest selling CD in history, behind only the band's previous release, Verse. Wow. On this day in 1991, Alice Cooper came to the rescue of two fans, Patrick and Deanne Kelly, whose California home was about to be repossessed. You don't repossess a house. You foreclose on a house. Anyways, Patrick had painted Cooper's face on the house to help sell the property. Alice Cooper showed up and signed autographs to help raise money for the couple. Pretty cool. This is fucking creep factor 10. On this day in 1990, Bill Wyman announced that his 17-month marriage with model Mandy Smith was over. If you'll remember, with consent of her mother, Smith had started dating the 47-year-old Rolling Stone bassist when she was just 13 years old. Why do you think the Rolling Stones never took him back? He didn't just retire. They were like, dude, you're a fucking pedo.
Yep.
And creepy. We're done with you. You're just going to bow out gracefully. You're never coming back. They never talk about him. He's never referenced. Nothing. They kind of just like ghosted that that fucking weirdo. And the funny thing is, his son, fucking weirdly enough, dated
the mother.
Andy Smith's mother.
Yep.
The fuck? Anyways. Yep. On this day in 1986, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble kicked off a 149-date North American and European tour. Right, I think that's the one I saw. Saw them, yeah, at the Orpheum in November, 86. Let's see. On this day in 1980, ABBA, good. On this day in 1975, on this day in 1975, Casey and the Sunshine Band started a two-week run at number one in the singles charts with That's the Way I Like It, the group's second U.S. number one of the year. The Beatles, no thanks. Bob Dylan, married Sarah Lerner, who cares? Beatles, who cares? you know,
oh, this segment, joke, this segment you're right. is starting this, to get better.
Yeah. No, you're right. This the Beatles shit, there's way too much of it. I'm like, you know, after a while, even I get fucking sick of it. And I look for content. I like content. On this day in 1957, Simon and Garfunkel appeared as Tom and Jerry on ABC TV's American Bandstand. Anyways. And finally, we get into it, buddy. Born on this day in, let's see, 1968. This is in Rasa Dawn from the American alternative hip-hop group Arrested Development, who scored the 1992 UK and US number two and US number eight single, People Every Day. This is The Curse right here. The group won two Grammy Awards in 1993 for Best New Artist. The fucking curse, because they were never heard of him again. And the best rap performance were also named Band of the Year by Rolling Stone magazine. The fucking Kiss of Death. Best new artist, right? Born on this day in 1950, Tina Weymouth, bassist for the Talking Heads. Born on this day in 1950, Stephen Van Zandt was born in Winthrop, Massachusetts at the Winthrop Hospital. Stephen Van Zandt, little Stephen. Of the E Street Band. I actually went into Wiki and changed that. I was the one that added Winthrop, Mass to that.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. That's Bob Gillis. Cool. Bob Gillis is the one that pointed that out. The unofficial mayor of Winthrop, Massachusetts, and the unofficial town historian. And finally, born on this day in 1943, I'll give this guy some obscurity. I'll give him some. I'll throw him some hype on the Bill Crates of Turntables podcast. Floyd Sneed, drummer with Three Dog Night, was born on this day in 1943. Hey, listen, 70s, they were the shit in the 70s, buddy.
Goodbyes. Good night.
Hey, listen, buddy, I might talk to you, I might not talk to you, but I want to wish you and the beautiful, wonderful, elegant Deb a wonderful Thanksgiving with your wonderful children who I've never met. I've never met, but I know they exist. I know they exist.
They exist.
You're very good at keeping your family private. You're very good at that. Very seldom. Put
you know,
them
being
out
the celebrity there. That I am, and you know, I try to keep them out.
I think. I think you keep them kind of. You know. Me, my life's an open book. I throw everybody in there. I throw them all in there. What the hell?
Well, the same to you and yours. Have a great day.
Absolutely. And like I always,
good night, everybody.
Yeah, well, like I always say to people, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. You are the engine that runs this machine. If it wasn't for you, then I would just be yelling at Jack probably at this point in our conversation. I can't believe I dragged him to 93 minutes, but he stuck it out. I love him for that.
Like my favorite artist, Morrissey says, boy, it's cold in here.
I like my favorite. Doing this show for I'm you to quote I'm my favorite home. Artist, Morrissey. The pleasure, the privilege is mine. We will be back. Well, I know I'll be back. Next week, if you want to watch this show, if you want to see us, find it's on the YouTube channel, Milk Crates and Turntables YouTube channel. Like, share, hit the alert bell. We're on every week. And that's it. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving.
Bye, Scotty.
Bye, Jackie boy.